W Media.
Buzzkills, the show that supports Fox News aborting a 2,808-week-old baby.
Fuck yeah.
I'm Liz Winstead, and I am joined by my co-hosts, Moji Alabodeel.
Hello, and Marie Khan.
Hello, all. Coming up in today's show, Moji and I talk about Black feminism and what we can do about the racist family planning structures with director and founder of Black Feminist Future, Paris Thatcher.
Plus, comedian and writer Sarah Schaefer joins from her car to talk about life and miniatures. I mean, that is a detour I am here for sure. But before all that, we have some chatting to do and some news to get to. So we haven't been together in a while, y'all.
Yeah, it feels like it's been months.
I know.
It might just be weeks.
Yeah, because someone can't just manage to stay in the U.S. long enough. Moji living my dream.
I am a woman of South America. Not really, but I'm adopting it. It's adopting me.
Talking about, Marie? You also were gallivanting around Panama, having the time of your life.
Yes, that's true. One trip for a set amount of time. Moji, meanwhile, is fine dining and literally taking those practices to the U.S.
Oh my gosh. I went to my favorite restaurant in Cartagena, Celele.
Colombia, for everybody. Moji chronically loves going there.
They make my favorite drink, which is called Mama Africa. And last time I went, I didn't take a picture of the recipe, so I wasn't quite sure where to start in recreating it. Because even though Marie likes to believe I'm in Cartagena every other week, it's less than that. And one of the first steps is fat washing gin, which sounds insane. And it basically is you put some gin and some fats, like I use coconut oil, but apparently some people use sesame oil or like olives, and you let it sit for a day or so, and then you strain it out, and it's supposed to make the gin velvety. So we'll see how that works out for me. I'm straining it after this pod.
Oh, so you haven't tried it yet?
I tried it in Cartagena, but not in my apartment in New York, no.
So this sounds awesome. It's like when we had, I had a drink here in Brooklyn that was buttered rye. And it must be the same kind of thing. And I wonder, did you find a recipe? Can we throw this in the show notes? Because I want to try instilling fats into my alcohol.
That's literally what I did. It was two parts alcohol, one part fat, a day or so of letting it sit. You can use any fat, but it says if you use animal fats, you got to use that shit real quick.
Oh, that would make sense.
But if you use vegetable fats like coconut oil, I think it'll store fine in your refrigerator for like a week or two. I didn't use a whole lot. So hopefully it's just post-work cocktails today worth of fat wash gin.
You know, I'm sure you're going to read about it and the best way to do it is take two gallons of coconut oil, that whole thing where it's like, why does it stay so good? Because it's made entirely of fat.
Exactly. Well, you're supposed to strain out the fat, but obviously some of it will stay there.
It lingers. Liquids. It lingers. So I invented a thing, I think, but I'm sure it's really a thing where I have been on this Noom diet for 2 months. I'm just kind of following this food pattern and doing all this stuff. And olive oil is really a no-no because it's just high in fat. And so I made a dressing, y'all, with a tablespoon of lemon hummus and then garlic and a shit ton of white wine vinegar. And it tastes like Caesar salad dressing and it doesn't have a ton of the fat. So if you want a creamy dressing, Dijon mustard, lemon hummus, white wine vinegar and garlic. And it's kind of Caesar salad-y, but it's fucking delicious.
Also, it seems vegan-y because it doesn't have the fish that you would have in a regular season.
Yeah. And it's so dressing. And it's so good. And you just put a shit ton of cracked pepper on it. I was like, Not missing a thing. So nice. That is Moji's buttering up her booze, which I'm here for, but I am, I'm trying to find a healthy alternative. That's not gross because I'm not a healthy alternative person whatsoever, but I'm just throwing that into the universe. I'll make up a recipe and put it in the show notes, but nice. It was really good. Yeah. I like getting some good into the universe.
Yes. Well, crap is reproducing at a rapid pace. And here's Molly to drop a steaming pile of this week's news on you.
Thank you so much, friends. You know, someone must be eating their fiber because the shit is coming out on the regular these days. Let's start with North Dakota, where this week a total abortion ban was signed and is now in effect. This is an only slightly tweaked version of their ban that was already blocked by courts. So they're just like bedazzling the same turd. No matter how you dress it up, it's still a piece of shit, right? I swear to God, the amount of energy these states spend on these stupid bans could power a megachurch for a week. Like in Kansas, where lawmakers have overridden a veto by the governor. So now Kansas is the recipient of three new heinous abortion laws, an abortion reversal mandate, a born alive bill, that's in quotes, and an insurance restriction. And remember, Kansans voted last year to reject a proposed amendment to the state constitution that would have eliminated the right to abortion, which is like going out to eat, saying you are deathly allergic to fish, and then the waiter bringing you a trio of fish dips because he knows what's best for you. On to the next biggest allergen of America, Texas. A Texas woman is suing the state for nearly dying from sepsis because she was denied an abortion. This week, she spoke at a Senate hearing and did not mince words. She told her senators the truth, that it's their fault that she almost died. And you know what's really cool is they actually apologized. I'm just kidding. They did not even show up to her testimony because when the going gets tough, they get going to Cancun because it's spring break always. Those were your little turdlets for the week. I hope you enjoyed them.
If you haven't seen the clip of this woman, it's great. And we'll put a link to it in the show notes. But it's just so disgusting how she's from Texas. And then Ted Cruz and John Cornyn, her senators, couldn't even fucking show up.
And, you know, later when they were asked about the testimony, John Cornyn had the balls to say that, oh, wow, that case sounds pretty bad. She should probably sue the doctor for medical malpractice.
Mm. You mean the doctor that's following the law?
Exactly, Moji. Great point. It's like mandating that you put razors in apples and then when people slice their tongues off, say that they should probably sue the farmers.
Oh, my God. It's true. You know, when we posted that story on social media this week, LifeSite News, one of those trash anti-abortion websites, came in and said the same thing. She should be suing the doctors for not following the law. And it's like, you should fucking just shut up.
Isn't Texas the state that successfully sued the federal government when they said what you can't do is what they did to that woman?
Yeah. Same state. It's great. Things are great. Molly, thank you.
A pleasure as always. Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Molly.
Thank you, Molly. Now let's get to our top stories, and we kick it off with this unemployed fop goblin.
Warren Jeffs didn't marry underage girls.
No, he's in prison for facilitation of child rape.
Whatever the hell that means, the rapist in this case has made a lifelong commitment to live and take care of the person. So it is a little different.
Do you think abortion is a wonderful, affirming act you feel so proud of? If you feel that way, you are promoting an ancient religious rite called human sacrifice. But if you're telling me that abortion is a positive good, well, you're arguing for child sacrifice, obviously. That it's okay to kill a child after the child has been born. Cory Booker believes that abortions are a vital strategic resource like oil or uranium.
Anybody who answers my trophy wife is my favorite possession is my hero. I don't give a shit. I'm voting for the guy.
She just does seem a little cunty.
Yeah.
Garbage people made of garbage.
Oh, Tucker. Wow. You know, we've been inundated with hot takes on why Fox would fire Tucker Carlson because it clearly has no qualms about what he says on the air. So in most of the analysis about his shitty self, we haven't seen many deep dives into Tucker's contribution to creating the extremist views on abortion that have emerged and led to this healthcare hellscape we're currently living in.
Yes. Liz, one of the most egregious contributions Tuck has made is this, in general, the disparaging comments on a public, on a major, you know, media outlet, as much as we don't want it to be, disparaging comments and discounting the effect of abortion bans having on actual people. In July, we saw in the news that a 10-year-old in the Midwest needed to get abortion care, and it was all over. He claimed this was not true. He has downplayed Roe being overturned, claiming on, again, his national platform that abortion isn't illegal, folks, not nationwide, that there's nothing banning people from traveling to other states, which we directly see. Like, we are not stupid. Excuse us. Does he not see the aid and abet language?
Oh, my God, Marie, that must make you insane.
It's just not even gaslighting.
Does like, this work?
It's just like a will for ignorance of everything that's going on around you and the people that are saying, hey, I'm sorry, this is affecting me. And then last and not least, he doubled down on trigger laws. Those laws that just right off the bat ban, in this case, abortion, claiming that people will get to live with the laws they want. No, especially not when it's a law from the 1800s.
Also, especially not with gerrymandering. Yeah,
yeah. Oh my God. Moji and I, this is an offshoot, but we were listening to a take earlier and they talked about how if you give other people the right to vote, it takes away your right. Like literally that advancing voting rights reduces your own vote as a white man.
Basically,
like it's pie.
Like it's pie. Voting is pie.
I know. And you know, I have to say the only time that that actually comes into play is abortion bans. Because every time you are giving a fetus a right, you are literally taking a right away from the person who is
every
pregnant.
Single time.
Like that is that's where it comes in, right? And you know, Tucker's got a whole history of doing that. And it's really dangerous to downplay it because it gives all these people this, you can go have an abortion someplace. Like everyone's got a car and money to just go travel around and have abortion someplace.
And it's literally, it's covering up crimes. That 10-year-old, an arrest did happen recently related and to the harm they caused. And we really hope they get justice.
Right. And because he does these like kind of punches where it's like, deny that these bans are harmful. Right. And then talk about people who have abortions in the most horrific ways possible.
Oh, that is fully his jam. He loves to say that people who support abortions are ghouls, and we heard it in the clip, are literally cultists practicing the ancient rite of child sacrifice. These are words he said. We just heard him say. And I just want to remind everyone that a ghoul is defined as an evil spirit. So what he is saying, and he says Democrats want all the time, is that Democrats are evil spirits.
Right. And I think that he was repeating that human sacrifice, child sacrifice. We just played two clips of that, but that is a narrative that he purports over and over again. In fact, the last clip that we played was from the last time he did public speaking just a week and a half ago at a fundraiser for the Heritage Foundation. And what you don't hear in that clip is people cheered when he said it. And so, you know, knowing that he's laying this out week after week after week after week after week, what happens is, and I don't think we can say this enough, is it redefines personhood for us, right? He doesn't recognize trans folks at all as humans. So I'm going to lay out just using the word woman, because he says over and over again, also that women are property and women are trophies, as he said there. And we need to remember that when you say that shit enough times, it becomes normalized and becomes part of the fabric of what we believe in our society, of who has rights and who doesn't. And that results in basically dehumanizing us and in fact, reclassifying our humanity and placing us into a category of we're barbaric because we believe in child sacrifice. We're incompetent because we get pregnant willy-nilly and whores. So that makes us property that needs to be monitored, regulated, and punished by the government. And his kind of rhetoric makes that shit okay. And look at where we're at with these laws.
And again, I want to remind you, he was, until he was fired, the most popular host on Fox News. So like, it's not like
on cable news.
On cable news. So like, it's not like no one was listening to him. So many people were listening to him.
So many people. And the thing that I fear the most is that he's going to even become like more popular and create this kind of Alex Jones world for himself on the internet where he's uncensored and doesn't have to listen to anybody and he can just say all this shit. And I just fear for that.
I also joked briefly that let's hurry up and do this podcast about him before he runs for president.
because then we can't talk about him if he's running for office. I hate that. And you know, it's a 1-2 punch, right? Because we have these commentators who are creating a public, you know, frenzy around this. And then that public frenzy is demanding politicians to create laws against this shit and politicians to then nominate judges who are going to find ways to have our oppression be constitutional. And Marie, we've heard about so much this week around the judges, but you're going to lay out how one knuckle dragger that isn't getting as much attention as he should is emerging this week in the news.
Yes, it definitely feels like we're in the era of corrupt judicial leadership. And who's ahead is really hard to say. Thomas Gorsuch, our favorite friend, Justice Kegstand. But what today we need to hone in on is the judge in the Miffy case, Matthew Kaczmarek. He has so much hidden bullshit, he should never have been confirmed. So starting right off the bat, he was born in Florida. And I really don't want to say people that are born in Florida shouldn't get to hold these judicial appointments, but I think there should be maybe greater tests involved. He grew up in the suburbs of Fort Worth, Texas, and his church, which interestingly enough, the West Freeway Church of Christ, it's located in White Settlement, Texas. That's a real place. You can find it on a map. Mm-hmm.
And that's a real name.
He grew up in a very conservative space. His mother is a scientist, also worked at a fake clinic. And the church they also attended is famous in the news because back in 2019, a gunman came in, killed two of the parishioners, and then a bunch of others that had to bring their Glocks on them on a Sunday unloaded into that person. And we also found it in some digging, this is public, that his sister was even scorned during her high school pregnancy, so much to the point apparently that she felt that she needed to leave for a maternity ranch.
Wow. And that was pretty, I feel like that was pretty formative for her. His sister, I think the same sister, was quoted as saying, he's really passionate about the fact that you can't preach pro-life and do nothing. And truthfully, he phoned it in. He is even on the ranch's board and has, well, was on the ranch's board and was a chairperson of the board until he was a federal judge.
You know, Texas loves those ranches. Remember that we did that story last year about that big ass ranch that's like, has like a man cave for the inseminators.
And work requirements.
You have to do labor.
Like maintain the farm camp.
Oh,
and he basically like committed to this as life, right? Like he went to this deeply religious college called Abilene Christian College. And then he also went for law school, went to the University of Texas. And it's reported that he studied legal foundations for abortion rights. So he knew exactly what he wanted to do and learned all the things that he had to do to graduate from college and join a religious, lawyerly think tank crazy place called the First Liberty Institute. I call it a legal crazy place. You want to call it a law firm? Go ahead. You can say whatever you want. I'm going to say it's not.
And a lot of people know about Alliance for Defending Freedom and, you know, the Thomas More Society. But this First Liberty Institute is the largest organization in the nation dedicated to exclusively defending religious freedom for all Americans. Moji, just tell folks some of the cases that they are proudly have won at the Supreme Court or are taking to the Supreme Court.
Oh my God, they're definitely doing their Googles full time. They did this, the 50-yard line case, which is when a high school teacher was basically praying at the 50-yard line, took that to the SCOTUS and won. They did a case where basically people wanted the right to not take vaccines, and they took that to the Supreme Court and won. And they did another case in Oregon where a lesbian couple was trying to get a cake made, and basically the proprietors were like, we don't do same-sex weddings here. And they took it to Supreme Court, and we'll see.
They love those cake cases, man. They just love a racist baker. They'll take any case on. I guess what we're trying to do is set the foundation for where this person comes from, because as we get to the current controversies around him, all of this shit was public knowledge, and every single person who voted for him could have looked this up. And so now at least
one Google.
Yeah, one Google. So it leads us to the controversies that are happening now. When you are nominated to be a judge, all the things that you have done have to be revealed in your confirmation, right? Any interview, any article that you've done before has to be given to the Senate, right? And he did two radio interviews that apparently he forgot. And when CNN reached out, he was like, oh, they didn't show up in my search in the media. So let's just listen to a clip from one of the radio interviews that he gave in 2014 that really lays out kind of his whole vibe.
Yeah, and I just want to make very clear, people who experience a same-sex attraction are not responsible individually or solely for the atmosphere of the sexual revolution. You know, it's a long time coming. You know, it came after No Fault Divorce. It came after we implemented very permissive policies on contraception. You know, the sexual revolution has gone through several phases. We just happen to be at the phase now where same-sex marriage is at the fore.
Okay, dude, here's the thing. He forgot he did that interview, and he was asked to come on, and literally this episode was called The Homosexual Agenda.
Sign me up.
And he revealed that agenda constantly during his confirmation hearings, and still he won. I mean, and still they put him forth. So I don't even understand.
It's wild to me, because literally when I think it was Senator Murkowski who's like, I feel duped. And I'm like, were you listening to his confirmation? Because they ask questions like, did you write the such and such a thing in the amicus brief in Obergefell? And he was like, I don't remember that. I'm like, guys, these are his words. Like, was she sleeping through his confirmation?
And to fall back on this, I can't state a personal view, but we know you're going to rule on that view, right? You're going to force that view on us via laws. And when you ask if you'd recuse yourself on topics you have personal beliefs, you claim you have a process in that. Like, bullshit. Bullshit.
He also dropped No Fault Divorce in there, which, by the way, I thought that emancipating yourself was part of being a human being in this country.
I was this old when I discovered that conservatives don't believe in No Fault Divorce.
No, because then you can't be a trophy wife if you can run away. No one says trophy ex-wife. That's not a thing.
And Moji, take us to the papers.
Oh my gosh. So on top of Republicans falling asleep during his confirmation hearings, the other things he didn't disclose were papers that he'd written, right? In particular, one in 2017, he'd actually submitted a draft for a paper at the Review of Law and Politics, which is a conservative law review. And several months after he'd submitted the draft, he like sent them a message like, hey, could you change my name on this to my colleagues at First Liberty because I can't talk about it right now. But what the person who got the email didn't know was that he already had had his original conversations about potentially becoming a federal judge. He was just waiting to talk to the White House. And apparently he did not want this terrible paper, which essentially says that like protections that trans people and abortion seekers should have from doctors shouldn't exist. And people of faith should be able to deny treatments to them. It's really funny that his name was only a placeholder until he was almost getting a lifetime appointment.
That's absolutely disgusting.
I would say too, it's deceiving to take your name off paper. Like, to me, people can always do those weird workarounds with like, you know, we're going to talk in a minute about his financial dealings. You know, people can always do weird workarounds with that and talk their way out of it. But to literally write papers and then read them and say, holy shit, they're never going to let me on the court if my name is on this. So I'm going to find some stooges to put their names on them. And think no one's going to know, like, dude, you can go back and look at drafts.
And the editor basically said, like, I'd never seen this before, like someone coming to like redact their name in this way. But they also did it. And his name doesn't exist on the paper. And someone just did two Googles this month and found out. About
it. And found it. And it really just lays out horrific feelings on abortion, horrific feelings about he says horribly disparaging things about trans people. He talks about contraception as not a right. Like, it is really bad. And maybe you wouldn't have been confirmed. But then so we have the radio, we have the papers, and then we have the icing on the shit cake, these weird financial non-disclosures.
Yes, we learned about some really egregious redactions of close to his entire financial life, which if you want to make sure someone will judge without a conflict of interest, you really need to know where their money is from.
Yeah, it came out that Sneaky Matt was not just hiding his ultra-conservative views in plain sight. He's also been hiding his net worth, right? Like, generally, federal judges are called to disclose how much money they have, and more importantly, where that money comes from. Like you said, Marie, to make sure that citizens know that they're where their influences and commitments are. Like, you don't want a Walmart judge, a judge whose fortune is tied to Walmart, ruling on your Walmart case, right? That's just not fair. And so 96% of judges are pretty transparent about their financial records. It's actually only less than 4% that redact their information. And Matt, it seems, is one of the 4%.
He might be all of the 4%.
Yes. We specifically think this means that about 80% of his fortune, and this is truly a fortune, between 2020 and 2021 in annual disclosures, he noted he held between $5 million and $25 million. So
can you say that again loudly?
$5 million and $25 million. Like, if that was me, A, I would brag way more about that number.
But also, Marie, they don't have to say specifics. Yeah. They can give ballparks.
Massive. And this is quote unquote common stock of a company. And this is where the redaction happened. He didn't disclose the name of that company, despite the fact that federal law only allows certain types of redactions that can endanger a judge or a family member. So we were talking, and what do we think he's hiding? Spoiler alert, the answer might be public stock, netting him betwixt $100,000 and a cool million over a year.
Each year?
A year. And we know this because, like you said, Moji, you can Google things on the internet. Back in 2017, Judge K publicly acknowledged owning public stock worth $2.9 million. And math nerds, those amazing people, they know what that stock is worth today.
And it's more than $2.9 million.
Right. And the thing that's so wild is with Publix, you know, you think, oh, it's a grocery store chain, whatever, you know. And the only way their stock isn't public, the only way that he has the stock is because his grandma worked there for 25 years and then he inherited the stock. But if you've been following it all the news, Publix, like heiress, is a nightmare. She's this woman named Julie Fancelli. She's 72 years old. And she has given 50 grand to Moms for Liberty. That, and they're the ones literally based in Florida. They're the ones behind pushing all of this CRT shit, book banning, censorship. They don't want to have any books about slavery or race or LGBTQ people and all of this shit. And they are the ones driving home all of this shit in schools. But also, this bitch is the biggest donor of the January 6th rally. $300K to Women for America First, $150,000 to the nonprofit arm of the Republican Attorneys General Association, who paid for all these massive robocalls to tell people to stop the steal. And on the same day she gave to Women for America and those attorneys general, she gave $200,000 to the Florida Tea Party Express so that they could get social media and radio ads out urging supporters of Trump to get to the rally. And the Washington Post is saying that she's obsessed with Alex Jones. And leading up to January 6th, she was emailing her family and her relatives and her friends links to Alex Jones talk shows. And it's hilarious because Publix was releasing these statements like, you know, it's troubling that she's doing this and she isn't involved in our day to day. And it's like, this bitch is the heiress to this and can't stop, won't stop apparently on the oppression. And so, you know, that is why it's Publix and why he's hiding it.
Yep.
It was a long rabbit hole that we went down and it is a lot, but I think it's important for you to know just how deep and far, as people are talking about Clarence Thomas and Gorsuch this week and looking at all their shit, that it's just going lower and lower and lower, and that the accountability bar is really low for the people who actually decide our fates. And which brings us to the current date of where we're at.
As always, these stories will be in the show notes. And we remind you, the best up-to-the-minute resource on accessing abortion care and funding for your care is ineedana.com. And now I'm really excited for our next guest, Marie, who's with us.
Harris Hatcher is a Black, queer, visionary feminist who's been organizing toward liberation for 20 years. She founded Black Feminist Future as a movement incubator and is here with us now.
Hi.
Welcome, Harris. Hi.
Hey, y'all. Thanks for having me. How y'all doing?
We are great.
Good. Pretty good.
That's good. I love to hear that.
We are really, really happy to have you joining us on the pod. And I wanted to get started and dive right into and have you tell us, how and why did Black Feminist Future get started? And what is the Black Feminist agenda?
Yes. So again, thanks for having me. My name is Paris Hatcher. My pronouns are she, her, and hers. And I have the privilege of being the founder and the executive director of Black Feminist Future. We are 9 years old this year, which is so exciting. And we were started because I come out of reproductive justice organizing. And when I was a part of that space, as well as doing organizing in the racial justice and LGBTQ space, I really saw the need to have a stronger, sharper analysis and movement focused on feminisms, but in particular, Black feminisms specifically. The attacks that we have been seeing for such a long time, most people can understand that the racial or the racist intent behind them, but oftentimes people are not as sharp around the sexist and misogynistic, and we would say even misogynoir, behind some of these attacks. So hence why we started Black Feminist Future. We were a lot of organizations that were inspired around the tragic murder of Mike Brown during those uprisings in 2014. We also were thinking about how Black women, girls, and gender expansive people, in particular Black trans women, were being murdered by the police and no one was coming to our defense. So in that vein, in the necessity to uplift the racial and gender implications of our lives, I started Black Feminist Future.
I love this and I love the name of your organization. But when I was reading about it, I was like, womanist and Black feminist are terms that Black women have embraced that basically recognize that our fight is intersectional. Can you talk about the nuances of these two identities overall? And in the context of Black Feminist Future, the way you use them, are they siblings? Are they cousins? Are they friends?
Oh, I love that. And I didn't forget the question about the agenda, but I love this question. So when I was thinking about this is a common point that folks like to engage with me. So like, are you a womanist or what? What do you think about this? And I think that womanism, a term coined by Alice Walker, who we need to call in and have a really important conversation around how she's aligning around transphobia right now, because we don't need our elders to be aligned in that way. And also gave a helpful solution, I would say, an intervention in 1978 in the landscape of a really white feminist movement. But I would really say that when we think about womanism, I think of it as like a cultural tool or a cultural intervention, not necessarily the same as a organizing or a movement building tool. So I think that when she was talking about womanism, again, as a really powerful way to really reckon with the reality of what was a really white women's movement that was erasing the ongoing contributions of Black feminists, I think of it as a cultural intervention. However, and people were organized around the identity or the term, maybe, but really at the same time, folks were really organizing behind the political identity and really thinking about what you talked about, the intersections of our lives as Black feminists. So at the same time, when Alice Walker coins the term womanism, you know, there's Black feminists who are organizing the National Black Feminist Organization. There are Black feminists who are proudly and out Black feminists who are still using the term as an organizing and movement building tool. So that's a distinction. I see them as really connected. I'm not mad at anybody who's like, I'm a womanist. I think there's no need to pit us against each other. I think that they serve different purposes in our journey to Black liberation. And yeah, so cousins.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I was like sibling, cousins, friends, you know, like definitely not enemies.
Not enemies, not opposing. But I can say this is that I wholeheartedly understand when Black women are like, I can't identify as a feminist because of the racist history of feminism. I get it. And what I retort back with is that that's not our feminism. We have Black feminisms. We have our own legacy, our own trajectory. And the more that you are able to surface that, like we have a whole tool on our website called Fractals that talks about our ever-ending, ever-learning movement for racial and gender liberation in this country and beyond, it's hard to just say feminism is a white woman thing because it just ain't.
It isn't at all. Yeah. I feel like personally I've used the, those both of those terms. I've called myself a feminist and a womanist at different points in my life and in my journey.
Yeah. And also the womanist piece, there's a huge body, incredible body of work around womanist theology. So I think that's the other piece too, is that womanism also is used in the context of theology work. People who are looking to unpack the sexist and racist history and also the brutality that of Christianity in particular. And how do womanists, how do Black women find themselves and locate themselves in a liberatory theology, which is called womanism as well, or womanist scholarship.
So I would love for you to tell us a little bit about the programs of Black Feminist Future, which I obviously abbreviated to BFF.
Yes, that's what we call it too. BFFs. And our members are BFFs. Yes. You're our BFFs.
So can you tell us a little about the programs? I know you started a leadership cultivation in 2019, and you have a bunch of other things that I'd love for you to tell us about.
Okay, great. So one of the things I'm really excited about is that we have a membership. Our membership is for Black women, girls, and gender expansive people in the US. And we also have members across the world. And as a member, we really, as one of our core strategic priorities, is we talk about building and nourishing and developing fierce Black feminist leaders who are able to take action in their own lives. So we see that as like the first step. Oftentimes, we get activated around issues in our own lives, who are also able to take action for issues in their community. So thinking about their family and even like their neighborhood or people they're in community with, and then are able to take action in broader society. So our membership space is a sacred space to do that. And I really am obsessed with all of our members, folks who have signed up to be with us, to throw down with us. A key part of our work is, and one of the ways that we see misogynoir, which is the particular hatred of Black women and girls, and trans misogynoir is like a particular hatred of Black trans people, in particular Black trans women, is through our abortion work. And so we have a whole campaign we call Abortionist Freedom. We really believe that it is time for us to reclaim, right, the values that we have around abortion. In particular, it's important in our life that it's around being able to access our freedom, the ability for us to decide what's best for us and our families, and that we do not need bans. We actually need more, right? We need more. We need more abortion access. And so our Abortionist Freedom work, which is held by our Constellation Hive. And our Constellation Hive is a group of members within our general membership who are focused on reproductive health rights and justice, which is amazing and exciting. And we do a variety of political education events. We do fun events. We also have a transnational project called the Okra Collaborative, where we work with Black feminists from across the African diaspora to really build relationships and connections, because we know the issues that we're fighting in the U.S. are not just specific to the U.S. They're interconnected. You name it, we're working on it. We're doing something about it.
I love that you're speaking to this interconnectedness. We see this shit now, right? Where we say you're a red state. We don't care about you anymore, right? And it's like we are totally intersecting here amongst ourselves in this massive land space that was colonized. And we know that same, like you said, that same environment and space, those same things are being done overseas. I wanted to ask you, I come from the space of being with a Practical Support Abortion Fund, Midwest Access Coalition. We're out of the Midwest and we're supporting folks with the travel, childcare, food, lodging costs. One of the areas, one of your programmatic focuses for BFF that I really loved was the defund family planning. That focus. And I was really hoping you could talk about that, because this is like beautiful to me. This is, I don't like what Margaret Sanger did either, but I also want abortion for my communities.
Right.
So I wonder if you could talk about that, the defund planning piece, how the goal of this is, I know in direct quote, dismantling the gendered racism that exists within reproductive care as we see it right now in the US.
Oh, that's so juicy. So we started that work with the National Birth Equity Collaborative, MBEC, a couple of years ago. And in particular, we really wanted to put a bright light on what you just talked about, the racist and gendered oppression that exists within the family planning model. So a couple of things I want to bring up. Number one, when people talk about family planning, abortion is not included in family planning. So that's number one. And that's why we actually should rarely use it or never use it at all. Two, another piece is that so much of the rhetoric and our understanding around family planning is rooted in ideas of population control and eugenics. But in particular around this population control, that if we give communities not what they need, but only a piece of the solution, which is seen as like birth control, that it will solve all issues. It does not take into consideration the fact that families actually want to plan their families, and that can mean children and having more of them, right? So the only family planning means that it's having access to birth control is incomplete. And having that being sold as like the silver bullet, in particular for Black communities, is incomplete. It's racist, it's sexist, and it does not live into our reproductive justice values. And so hence, while we need to abandon the family planning model as what we think is the vision that our communities really need.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for explaining and delving in there.
I really think it's important that you explained it and delved it in too, because I feel like people would read that and be like, wait, what do you have against family planning? And it's like, no, there's a root of racism in this.
Yeah, we want reproductive justice. That's actually what we want.
That's absolutely what we want. And what we deserve.
Yeah. What we deserve, yes.
So coming up on June 8th to the 11th, you have an amazing gathering called Get Free, a Black Feminist Reunion. What can folks, Black folks, who want to attend, expect?
So this is a love child. I am so excited. We were to gather in 2020, but you know, the COVID came and is still here. But now we're finally going to be able to bring together our members and other Black feminists, Black women, girls, and gender expansive people from around the country in Baltimore, the Charm City, so charming, for our Black Feminist Reunion. I think there's like four things that folks could absolutely look forward to. So one, go to Get Free to connect, to meet people that are working on so many different issues. Build that Rolodex, right? Get to meet and learn from people. Two, you are going to deepen your analysis and your consciousness from some of the most brilliant minds and thinkers and strategists and creatives in this country talking about Black feminisms at this time. We're going to be doing that at our plenaries, at our keynotes, at our workshops, at our tea talks. It's going to just be so much juicy and deliciousness. Number three, come and shape the future. So we talked a little bit about, or a question was around, what's the Black feminist agenda? We're going to be really allowing our members and participants to shape the Black feminist agenda. What are the key top issues that we want to work on in advance on the national level, on policy, on narrative power, on organizing? And then fourth is to celebrate. We'll be having a North Star Gala where we're going to be celebrating Black feminists, brilliance and leaders who have really made incredible contributions to the field, and an awesome dance party with musical performances and DJs. So really, those are the four reasons to get free. I mean, you really don't need a reason.
You don't need any reason.
But if you needed one, this is reason to be there.
That sounds like such an amazing event.
Yeah, I can't wait. If you're not going to be there, I don't know what to
I'm
tell
judging
you
judging myself.
You need
I'm
to make better decisions.
I'm judging Moji. She was born in Baltimore. We were literally talking about this yesterday, and I was like,
that is my homeland.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, come get it. We want you.
We're so happy that you were able to join us today, Paris. And before you log off, I wanted to ask you, A, how can folks who cannot attend in person the reunion, how can they support and get connected to BFF? And you mentioned the hive structure, and I know that is a component and a part of it. So how can Black folks, Black girls, gender expansive Black community, how can they all get connected with you if they can't show up in person necessarily?
Yes. So if you are an ally and accomplice, you are down to disrupt this culture of misogynoir and you want to break up with patriarchy, you can sign on to our newsletter to get updates from us. Follow us on social media, Black Feminist Future, and also become a donor to our work, right? We know that Black feminism is for everybody. We have tools and resources to deepen your study. For Black women, girls, and gender expansive people who will not be able to make it, we are going to be having a virtual offering. Those tickets are going to be going live soon, but also become a member. We're always pulling them together. There's always an opportunity to learn, to build and develop. At this time, nobody can be on the sidelines. And we know that being by yourself, you have to fight isolation. So join a community, join an organization. And we hope if you're a Black woman, girl, or gender expansive person that you join Black Feminist Future. You can follow us online, the socials. We can't wait to have you.
Paris Hatcher, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a pleasure.
Thank y'all.
To sign up for the Get Free reunion in Baltimore, become a member of Black Feminist Future, follow them on socials, or donate to their work, check out the links in our show notes.
And now, the party game that is faster than Monopoly and more fun than Taboo, 6 Degrees of Abortion. This is when Moji and I take a story from the news and Liz has 6 chances to link it to abortion. Let's see if we can stump her this week. Moji, what do you got?
I am excited. So this week, Liz, you may or may not know that Elizabeth Holmes of Theranos had a baby. And she named her baby Invicta, which is wild. Anyway, we would like you to, in 6 tries or less, link Elizabeth Holmes to abortion.
Oh, really? Would you? Well, it turns out we all watched the Elizabeth Holmes HBO series, or I watched it anyway.
I definitely did not.
With Amanda Seyfried, and she was amazing in it. And I just did a show in Toronto, and guess who was in the audience and who I met backstage?
Amanda Seyfried.
Oh, well, Amanda Seyfried. So, and then she was really funny and talked about abortion and was totally into it. It was funny because I didn't know she was in the audience. And one of my jokes about George Santos is the only thing he hasn't claimed to be is CEO of Theranos. And so she came back and she said, I love that joke. That was so funny. So not only that, she liked one of my jokes. So there we go.
I just want to say that our producer, Remy, said, Liz probably knows Amanda Seyfried some way. And I was like, I think it's going to be HBO. Anyway, she was right.
Bam. Bam. I know. So that's it. Easy breezy. That's a fun one. I'm always excited when I win. I know it takes away your joy of beating me, but whatever. I'm going to take it. I'm taking it.
I can't.
Moji, I get to do a promo about our favorite time of the year.
Oh, great.
I know. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Mm-hmm, I do.
It's Netroots Nation. Netroots Nation is the largest gathering of progressive activists in the country. And this year, it's in Chicago, July 13th to the 15th. Your Buzzkills will be there broadcasting 3 shows live, doing some abortion evangelizing, and hoping to see you there. It is 3 days of cutting-edge panels and training sessions to help you accomplish more with your activism and hear amazing keynote speakers from politicians, activists, and organizers that always inspire. Plus, there are also fun parties and networking events so you can have some fun with people you haven't seen since the before times. And who knows, if you join us at Netroots this year, maybe Moji Marie and I can belt out something with you on karaoke night. Look, we all know that being in the trenches defending our freedom is exhausting. And Netroots is a great way to reset, recharge, and recommit to do the work you know we have to do. So go to netrootsnation.org and sign up using promo code BUZZKILLS and you'll get 10% off your ticket. Netroots Nation, July 13th to 17th, Chicago. All the details are in the show notes. We hope we see you there.
Oh my God, it's so much fun. All the best people are there.
All the best people are there. And before we continue, you all know by now that we just simply couldn't do this podcast without sponsors who have given us so much help. This week's sponsor is another podcast. Moji, tell folks about it.
Tired of true crime podcasts hosted by Bud Light slurping lefties? Then you need Anatomy of a Baby Murder, the newest show from the Maximum Fundamentalist Podcast Network. Each episode, your hosts, Megan and Megan, take an abortion case ripped from the headlines and use amateur sleuthing and Christian Science to bring the case to its natural conclusion that abortion is baby murder. In this week's episode, you'll meet Susan. Susan claimed that she was pro-life, but when her supposedly wanted pregnancy hit 19 weeks, Susan found out that her unborn child had an undeveloped brain, and instead of turning to the Lord, she turned to abortion. The Megans dive into Susan's motives. Did her chronic binge watching of the Rachel Maddow show cause the bad brain? Was Susan coerced by doctors who have an anti-brain bias?
they ask the questions that most professionals aren't even considering and show a side of abortion that the abortion industrial complex doesn't want you to believe, that abortion is never necessary. Anatomy of a Baby Murder is available today wherever you get your QAnon podcasts.
Okay. That was basically the Tucker Carlson show every night. Like,
it was just missing goals. It just needed goals.
Joining us next, we have Emmy Award-winning comedian and writer Sarah Schaefer. Hello, Sarah. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
I'm so glad we got to sync up. So right off the bat, we're in a cesspool. We know it. We read the news. You do. You read the news really well. How are you getting out of bed every morning?
Oh, you know, I have to really get my energy up and say, you know what? Fuck it. And I, you know, there's this video. This is really how I'm getting through it is I saw this video a while back, you know, Instagram, the algorithm shows you things. And it was just this woman. I think she's from Europe somewhere, just skydiving. And but she's dancing like modern dance while she's flying through the air towards the earth. And she's like doing these beautiful moves and almost like she's like walking and calm, like she's in total control of her body. And I was struck by it because it to me was a perfect visualization of what it feels like to be alive right now, which is like we're hurtling towards destruction. But why not be creative and artful on the way down? And so that's how I'm getting through it.
I feel like you're going to have to send that link because I'm here for it.
For a second, you're watching, you're, oh, look at that beautiful dancer. And then you realize she's falling to the earth from like 30,000 feet, you know, and is in total control. And, you know, it's like she's not acknowledging that this, you know, that she's in danger. She's, and it's, I very much admire her and I would never do anything like that.
No, we leave that for professionals. Yeah. You have your things you do. I have my things I do.
Exactly.
Also, I want to thank you for joining us from your car, because that is not something we get all the time.
I actually apologize for that. I'm normally more professional and in a real place, but I'm traveling and there's crazy weather in Southern California. So I had to like time when I was driving a certain way. And now I'm outside of McDonald's in Kingman, Arizona. So
The heartland. I don't know. Yeah. Do we say that about Arizona? I'm not good with geography.
It depends how close Sheriff Joe is to you.
Okay.
Out. Yeah, I would say Arizona, it's not the armpit because that's Florida. No. Yes. Depends on your opinions, but yeah, Kingman, Arizona, from what I can tell, is very red. It's a very red area.
You have made some pretty fantastic satire videos, which we love. You may know this about our show or not, but we actually run on fake commercials because nobody wants to sponsor our abortion podcast here. I also really love your satirical commercials.
Thank you.
Especially the one about getting into comedy, which apparently went viral. And it's so hilarious. How have you been able to navigate the comedy world, carve your path, and develop your own unique voice while avoiding opening for Joe Rogan? Because that's a feat.
Yeah, it is it's a choice you have to make at some point. Do you want to go into the Joe Rogan river or do you want to stay on the shore? You know, it's been a journey. I've been doing comedy for 20 years. I've tried it all. I've achieved some of my top dreams. And others have eluded me. I feel very fortunate to be still hanging on by a thread, you know. And one thing I think that, which I've been actually now, my comedy is about this, but it's about always choosing between your creative goals and like your survival business goals and like being able to pay rent, and how a lot of times our business, especially in Hollywood, is not, those two things are not aligned many times. And a lot of all of us are forced into those choices. And some really don't care about the creative and they just want to be famous because of all of that provides. And then that brings up questions of how do you maintain your integrity? It's really hard, you know, because you're constantly being faced with choices. Like, yeah, okay, I'm not going to open for Joe Rogan. Of course, his fans and
they wouldn't even get you.
Yeah.
You know, okay, fine. we're not meant to be together. But, you know, little choices you have to make along the way. There's a club that's now, you know, still booking a known sex pest.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to perform there anymore? Well, I need the stage time or the money. Sometimes you get paid to do these spots. There's not a comedian that doesn't have to make those moral choices constantly, whether they realize it or not, they are.
For those listeners that we have right now that don't know, one of those threads that you're hanging on with and a moral choice you're making is a solo show.
Yeah.
You're out here with this show. We were hoping you could talk about how you came up with the title. We want to let you explain it. It's so clever. And what your attendees can expect.
So the show is, I call it a solo show because it's not straight stand-up. It's conceptual. There's a theatrical element to it. And it's called Going Up. And it's a fake seminar on how to make it in the comedy business. And I take on the role of like this guru Tony Robbins Scientology type leader. And yes. I'm indoctrinating you into the cult of comedy and all the things that go into making it as a comedian. None of it has anything to do with being funny or not. That's like sort of my premise.
Secondary.
Exactly. And the title Going Up is short-term lingo amongst comedians for going on stage and performing. So when we're talking to each other, we'll say, hey, are you going up tonight? Are you getting up? You know, and that's just a lingo that comedians use. And I thought, oh, that really works well when you combine it with a multi-level marketing culty where there are levels and you're going up towards ascending towards the light, towards stardom, you know, like, and so yep. my show goes into all that, but really it's like a, under the surface, it's like a letter to myself when I was younger, telling my younger self all the things I wish I had known when I started out. You know, because I started out, like I was saying earlier, was just focused on being creative, being funny. And then I realized, oh, there's a lot more to this that has nothing to do with being funny. And I wish I had known. So this, it's a real, it's like a reckoning with the comedy business. And I'm really pushing to me, what feels like a risky, vulnerable statement on it. And it's been an amazing project. And I'm now touring it more widely after working on it for a year. And I have very few things in my life that I've been as proud of as I am this show. So I hope people will come.
We are so excited. We'll make sure folks know in the show notes where you can find and book tickets.
Thank you.
And also you talk about being proud of that, but also your credentials include being a miniaturist,
yes.
Which also we could see you've kind of incorporated into the new show. Can you talk about that and particularly about your Etsy shop?
Yes. So I have been a lifelong miniature enthusiast, dollhouses.
I'm sorry, what is that?
I have been a lifelong miniature enthusiast. I have collected miniatures, dollhouse stuff. And then during the pandemic, I became obsessed with creating my own miniatures. And I even made a miniature comedy club in 1/12 scale. It's tiny. And that sort of, in a way, it was inspired my solo show because it became a meditation on comedy clubs and my place in it. It literally gave me perspective.
Drinking everything down just gave you a good perspective.
It does. And it gives you a sense of control. But yeah, I love miniatures. I love how cute they are, but also the magic and the art that goes into it, the building, the creativity. And I have incorporated them into my show, which is crazy. When I started the show, it had no miniatures in it. And then it developed into it. And I've now combined all my interests into one place. And my Etsy
shop. That's amazing.
Yeah, my Etsy shop. I just started selling my first handmade miniature by me. And it's a little miniature evidence board, like, you know, in a show where there's a conspiracy theorist and they've got red string connecting all the pieces of evidence and they're solving a murder. I've made a miniature one of those that you can buy.
Are you going to make a miniature
picture evidence shed to put it in, because that was a
it needs a shed to go with it. That came from my stand-up. I had a whole joke about that stuff, and I was like, oh my god, I could make a miniature version of that. And I love combining all that.
I grew up and enjoyed Polly Pockets, and really, like, I feel like you took that concept and gave it teeth. You're like, all right, Polly. Polly went to school for a little bit. She's over here with her murder board. I love the different creative aspects your comedy and your narration and storytelling takes the whole story.
Thank you.
Yeah, that was kind of what was funny about also the how to sell a TV show in 3 easy steps. And it was like 40 easy steps. And I was like, oh, this joke is really specific.
The video I made of how to sell a show in 3 steps, I literally was in the midst of like being rejected on a show at that moment. And I was frustrated with the process. And so I just straight up told you how it works. And that was funny in itself. And then I didn't think many people would appreciate that video. And I was shocked at how wide it spread. And even like amongst extremely famous, successful people were sharing it. And I was like, oh man, we're all in the same shit, you know, like in Hollywood. And it was crazy.
Well, I feel like it also has a lot of the elements of what you said about your solo show, in that this is like, you know, there's so many steps, there's so many little bits to it. And like, if you scale back and look at it, you're like, oh, this, I don't know, this is just, I feel like I'm rambling in my thought here, but those kind of came together in my head when I was talking.
I love that as a bird's eye approach, though, to like organize, like, it's such a, like, I don't know if it's even left-brained, but it's such a different way to look at it.
Well, and it's like, it's taking what is an extremely nebulous, or I don't know if that's the right word, but an extremely unknowable, intangible path laid before us. It's like all of America is like this. Like, you can be a billionaire. and then the steps are, and it's all gaslighting. You know, I'm not to overuse the term, but it's all like, oh, it's easy. You just do this and this and this, and none of it, it's all a lie. And so I play with that a lot. My character in the show is like the queen of gaslighting. So
I'm so happy that you could join us here today. We wanted to remind folks listening that in addition to everything else you do and are working on, you've won 2 Emmys for your work.
I did.
Late Night with Jimmy Fallon. And talk about an environment, you have tons of guests coming through. Have you met cool folks? Have you made cool connections? Who'd you fangirl over?
Oh my God.
Like the most.
Because I won Emmys for like being the digital media team. And that show was very innovative in how it approached online social media stuff. And they're still doing it to this day. And I felt very proud that I was part of it at the beginning of the show. But I got to run down to the green rooms and like film little interviews with every guest. So I met like everybody. And I think one of my favorites was Molly Shannon. She gave me advice that I'll never forget. I loved her so much. And when I met John Hamm, I floated out of the room.
I watch him on TV. I float.
Much more gorgeous in person than you could imagine.
Impossible.
His eyes sparkling. That's off the top of my head. It was such a magical, cool experience to be part of that show in the beginning, especially.
Oh my gosh, Sarah, that's actually an excellent way to end this interview. Thank you so much for joining us and talking to us from your car like a professional.
Yeah, I'm on the road. Yes. I'm a road dog. Thank you guys so much.
Bye.
Bye.
For tour dates, follow Sarah Schaefer on Instagram and go to her Linktree for all things tour info. That's our show. Thank you so much to Paris Hatcher from Black Feminist Future for joining us today. We hope you'll attend Get Free, become a member of Black Feminist Future, and donate to their work at the links in our show notes.
Thank you so much for listening. You can support our pod by taking a minute to subscribe, write a review, and give us 5 stars. With your help, we can get more people to learn about this assault on abortion access. Again, follow us on all the socials at Abortion Front to keep up on all the latest repro news.
And looking for where you might fit in to do some abortion activism? Check out our 5-part activist series, Operation Save Abortion, at operationsaveabortion.com. The series is available in pod and video form. And make sure you check out the activist calendar that's attached to it, which is chock full of local and national actions and educational opportunities. One of the featured events coming up on our activist calendar, all Options is offering a new public online training for counselors, faith leaders, social workers, and anyone interested in learning more about offering spiritual support to people making pregnancy decisions. This online training will be held in 3 parts throughout May, and the deadline to sign up is May 9th. The link for that is in our show notes. And the pod is going to be dark next week, but the following week, we'll be joined by Christine Harley, CEO of Secus, Sex Ed for Social Change, and comedian Irene Tu joins us to chat about her Big They Energy tour dates.
Join our Patreon. You'll support great content and get cool FBK merch and experiences. All pledges support this pod and all our activism at Abortion Access Front. Pledge at patreon.com/feministbuzzkills. FBK is edited by Remy de Tournay and is produced by Abortion Access Front.
And finally, we leave you with Steven Crowder showing his whole ass, and no, we're not changing our minds, by revealing that he doesn't know being publicly unlikable is grounds enough for divorce.
My then wife decided that she didn't want to be married anymore. And in the state of Texas, that is completely permitted. It's been the most heartbreaking experience of my life, what I consider to be my deepest personal failure. And just so you know, my opinions on parenting and families have not changed. I've always believed that children need a mom and a dad, that divorce is horrible. And I still believe that children need a mom and a dad and that divorce is horrible. But in today's legal system, my beliefs don't matter. In Texas, divorce is permitted when one party wants it, period.
Feminist Buzzkills, the podcast from Abortion Access Front. New episodes drop Friday. When BS is poppin', we pop off. And if you want to support our podcast and all the work of Abortion Access Front, like, subscribe, and join our Patreon at patreon.com/feministbuzzkills.